if you look at the studies for Booking.com, Expedia, and you look at the kind of key search words that people are looking for, the key search words were things like, you know, tree houses, wagons. I saw some cool ones. Even the RV world and the kind of auto camp thing and all that, you know, it's good. I think that stuff can all go to a whole different level, by the way, the whole kind of RV thing, you know, creating very different kind of designs and very different looks and feels to those things.
Welcome to Behind the Stays, a podcast that shares the stories behind your favorite Airbnbs, boutique hotels, and hospitality brands, and the hosts, operators, and entrepreneurs who have brought them to life. Every Tuesday and Friday, you'll meet the military veterans, the retired flight attendants, tech entrepreneurs, the school teachers, the single moms, and the real estate investors who are all, in their own unique ways, shaping the future of travel and hospitality. Discover how these visionaries from all over the world have built chic cabins in the mountains, designed bohemian bungalows on the beach, erected eclectic off-grid and nature-immersed escapes, and so much more. Behind the Stays is brought to you by Spontaneous, the internet's best destination for last-minute Airbnb deals. You can subscribe for free at spontaneous.com. And I'm your host, Zach Buzicruz, co-founder and CEO of Spontaneous. All right, friends, enjoy the show. In just a moment, you'll meet Louis Thompson, founder and CEO of Nomadic Resorts, a consultancy that designs and builds some of the world's most innovative and unique hotels and homes. Growing up, Louis wanted to be a chef, and while he never pursued his culinary aspirations, he did wind up designing some of the world's most memorable restaurants. In this conversation, Louis and I discuss how he thinks about designing luxury unique stays, how he predicts short-term rental collections and hotel brands will partner in the coming years, the unique opportunities that exist in Europe to lease land from estates to build unique structures on, and so much more. All right, friends, without further ado, get ready to meet Louis. All right, Louis, we are live. Good sir, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm really good, thanks. Nice to be on the show, Zach. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it is it's an absolute honor. I think we connected on LinkedIn, and I you know, the podcast has grown a bit, and so I get a lot of DMs from people, and you know, half the time it's like just people trying to promote stuff that I'm just not particularly interested in. And when you reached out, I always Google everybody, right? And I always Google their company just to be safe. And I Googled Nomadic Resorts, and I was just totally blown away by what you guys are doing and what you're building. So I am just ecstatic about this conversation. So yeah, thanks for making some time to chat. My favorite question to kick the show off, Louis, is to ask folks, if I were to have met you as a 10-year-old and were to have asked you what you wanted to be when you grew up, like, what would you have said?
That's an easy one. I wanted to be a chef.
Chef?
Yeah. I think probably deep down, I still do want to be a chef, but now I design restaurants for other people, basically.
That's amazing. So where do you think that, like, love of the culinary space came from? Did you grow up, like, cooking a lot with your family?
No, actually, on the contrary, my mother doesn't cook at all. You know, you'd be lucky if she poached an egg for you. So I think, you know, we had to sort of make do. And I'm a greedy person by nature, and I love food, love wine. So I've always been, you know, yeah, just led by my nose, I suppose. So always love food, always love cooking. Just probably didn't get to do it as much as I might have done professionally, unfortunately.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's, I feel like we could have a whole conversation about that. I like to call myself an aspiring foodie, in that, like, I love restaurants, and my wife, it's one of my favorite, you know, my wife and I's favorite things to do is to, like, try the next, like, you know, best written up restaurant in town. And when we were traveling a lot, we would always, you know, consult an array of online sources to try to figure out, like, where was the place to go, right? And the reality is, I just like good food. I don't think I'm sophisticated enough to be able to, like, tell the difference between, like, you know, the various classes. Like, I can't tell the difference between, like, a 1-star Michelin and, like, a 3-star. Like, I honestly tend to prefer the 1-stars from the 3-stars, to be totally candid with you. But so anyways, I'm an aspiring foodie. And so the fact that I'm in the presence of somebody who, you know, not just wanted to be a chef, but actually designs restaurants is pretty awesome, man. I'm excited.
Thanks. I mean, amongst other things, we design restaurants, but we also design plenty of other stuff, including pods and tree houses and whatnot.
Yeah, and I mean, that's really what I want to talk to you about today. But talk to us a little bit about like the founding story of Nomadic Resorts. And if you don't mind, just give us a quick overview of like what it actually is. As you said, you guys design restaurants, you design tree houses, you design these pods. But talk to us just a little bit at a high level about your company.
Okay, so basically I used to work for a hotel company called Six Senses Resorts and Spas, which is now quite a big company. But when I worked there, it was a very small number of resorts. Okay. And basically, I was employed by the boss to do the first – I did permaculture design, right? So I was involved in designing vegetable gardens, organic vegetable gardens for people. And I basically got recruited by the best resort in the world. I mean, literally voted the best resort in the world that year, to design a farm-to-fork vegetable garden for them. And so I went to the Maldives to work on the project, and I started doing the vegetable garden. And then there was like a huge noise, like, and the fence exploded. And and basically a huge wave of water kind of washed the whole vegetable garden away. So that was the 2005 tsunami.
Jeez.
And after that, I basically got recruited by the projects team to do landscape design for other projects. And that's how I ended up working at Fresh in the Garden, which was the first major farm-to-fork restaurant. And we did like a mushroom hut. We grew the first mushrooms in Maldives, grew tons of different fruit and vegetables, did a composting toilet, and rope bridge and all this different kind of crazy stuff. And that's how I ended up getting involved in the design part of the equation, was really through that.
Wow.
So I worked with them for 10 years, and then I did a big project in Thailand, Sonavakiri, and I realized they asked me to do some research on kind of tented camps, and I was they had task forces, and I was like task force leader, tented camp guy. it sounds like sort of bad sci-fi movie. but basically, when I did that research, I was like, actually, the hospitality industry is going to go in this direction. This is going to be what people are looking for.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So wait, backing up just a little bit, when you say farm to fork, I think in the States, if I'm understanding this correctly, people just call it like farm to table here. I don't know if are those the same thing as far as you're concerned?
Yeah. I think the same thing.
Okay. Okay. So what does that actually mean? So does that qualification require that all of the food be grown, or most of the food be grown, like on site? Or when you're talking about designing these like vegetable gardens, right, and these like very elaborate, like they brought, I had no idea they would bring somebody in just to do something like that, right? Like so what needs to be in place to have that quote unquote like certification or that badge?
Well, there's not really any certification involved in that kind of thing. So basically, and it really depends on scale, because the Maldives is quite small. So you're not going to be able to do a vegetable garden across the whole island to supply all the food for the restaurant. But what you can do is you can kind of focus on some high value perishable goods that are difficult to transport and deliver fresh to Maldives. So that was things like, you know, microgreens, wheatgrass, sprouts, mushrooms was a big one, salad crops. So basically we'd focus on the stuff that didn't travel well. And we did vegetable gardens mostly focused on like herbs, greens.
Yeah.
And then, you know, specialty culinary items basically.
Wow. Okay. Jeez, this is so fascinating. I guess I should have assumed that there was some brilliant like brain behind this, but alas, I don't think I've ever spent much time thinking about the people that are designing these very elaborate, like, you know, gardens for these restaurants. It's quite remarkable.
It's a funny thing, you know. Even like luxury resorts, I think people don't think about who designs it or how it's built.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you go up, you go, wow, this is great, paradise. Look at all this cool stuff, and you don't really think about it. But actually, I've been on the other end of the kind of spectrum, I suppose. Doesn't mean I'm on the spectrum, but basically there's a whole kind of massive process and protocols that go behind this stuff to get this stuff built. Building in Maldives and in some of the remote island destinations where we work, it's a pretty complex thing. And if you forget three windows or you didn't put the screws in the boat, you could be screwed.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine. The closest thing, like as you're talking, a friend was building this like luxurious like lodge, nothing like huge, but I think there were maybe 15, 16 bedrooms or so. And they were building it on an island like right off the coast of Maine. And by right off the coast, I literally mean right off the coast. Like you could, if you threw a rock and you were, a baseball player, you could probably hit the island. Right. And yet the process of having to get everything from like mainland Maine to that island via boat, it made the project like 100 times more complicated just because they had to get a boat to get all the freaking supplies from the mainland to this island. And again, that island was like right off the coast. So I can't imagine just what goes into the builds of some of these incredibly luxurious landscape hotels, which, as you just mentioned, are oftentimes in some of the most hard to get to places on Earth.
So I'll give you an idea. When we did the completed Son of a Kiri in Thailand, I had to go to Bangkok and I had to buy six wheel truck fulls of plants. I had to drive them up in convoy, like a sort of, Smoking the Bandit style, back up to the chat. And then I had to drive them onto a barge, and the barge had to travel a week to get to the site. And then we had to dock the barge on the beach and put these steel planks on plates on the beach. And the trucks drove off and delivered the plants to the nursery. But I mean, it's kind of quite crazy, actually. It doesn't really make a lot of sense in some ways.
Well, and what does make sense though is like when you're not steeped in this world, right? When you see the price tag per night on some of these places, you might be like, how could anyone possibly charge something like this for, this place? And yet it's like, well, no, the reason is because they had to get these six trucks and they had to load them on a barge and that was just the plants. That was just the plants, right? Of all things. And so it's truly remarkable. So you were leading this like task force around tents, right? So talk to us a little bit about like what you guys were focused on and specifically help us understand the through line between how this project, I assume, winds up inspiring you to create these really remarkable like designs for these very cool pods, which I know are, we'll connect this to the short-term rental space in just a second here, but how do you go from leading this task force to getting the idea for these like really unique designs?
So basically I was building a resort in that same resort in Thailand where we had to deliver the plants actually. Okay. And that project ended up costing over $1 million per key, right?
Wow.
Construction cost, huh? And it took, I lived and worked on the island for 4 years, full time. And basically by the end of it, I was like, this just doesn't make any sense. Of course they have to charge these crazy room rates because the whole business model doesn't make much sense. So me and Olav got together at the end of the project and we had dinner with a couple of different people who'd all worked on the project and kind of knew what the downside was. And we said, how would you do this in a different way? And what we, to give you an idea, at one point in that project, we had 1,000 workers on site.
Wow.
Imagine.
Wow.
And like
a thousand workers.
Yeah.
And $1 million per key at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So at the end of that project, I was like, this just doesn't make any sense. If I was an investor, I'd be going crazy. Man. I'd have had a heart attack. In fact, I think a couple of them probably did. I'm only half joking. So we said, okay, how would you do this differently? And this is how the idea of Nomadic was born. We said, well, actually, what you do is you'd make this stuff in a factory somewhere, where it's not raining, where, people can go and, can live at home and make it all really precisely. and then ship it all with a very small team of pretty skilled dudes and just put it up very quickly. And that's how we started making the tents. That was it. It was like, we said, okay, well, we can design that. And so we did.
And did you have a background like in industrial design or are you an architect by trade? Like how does one come to even know how to design something like this?
No, I'm the strangest of all of the people in the team. I have a degree in European politics, which is really useful. I thank my stars every day as an English person to know so much about European politics, particularly now. But I also have a hotel management degree. That's how I got the job. And then I had a permaculture design degree, and not degree, but like a diploma. And but basically what happened was I just ended up being in like this very specific niche, and Olav joined me. He's a qualified architect. Then I have landscape architects. I have tensile membrane engineers. I have structure engineers. I have a whole bunch of people much smarter than me, basically, sort of surrounding me, who actually do all the interesting stuff.
I was at an industry networking event recently with some incredible hospitality entrepreneurs, and there was one topic of conversation that everyone was chatting about. Can you guess what it was? Keep in mind, this was an event with some of the most incredible folks building unique stays, micro resorts, and other unforgettable Airbnbs. So these folks knew what they were doing. These weren't like industry newbies. Any guesses? Can you guess what the hottest topic of conversation was? Well, if you guessed cleaning, you'd be right. You see, it doesn't matter if your average nightly rate is $100 or $1,000, if it's your guest room or the world's most unique treehouse, if the stay isn't clean, your guests aren't going to be happy. And finding the right cleaning team, especially these days, is really tough. But my new friends at Turno help make it easier. Turno is the smartest way to schedule, pay, and find vacation rental cleaners. Think of Turno as an Uber or TaskRabbit for STR hosts. Simply create an account, describe your listing's cleaning needs, and Turno will match you with cleaners near you. And get this, each cleaner's profile is complete with ratings and reviews from other STR hosts, so you know what you're getting into and who you're going to be working with ahead of time, rather than crossing your fingers and praying that your new cleaner meets your expectations. And you can store all of the cleaning preferences that you have in your account that is associated with each of your listings. This ensures a quality cleaning every time. Turno's auto-scheduling feature syncs to your rental calendar and automatically generates cleaning projects associated with guest check-in and check-out dates to be shared with cleaners. After the cleaning, Turno can auto-process payments for you. How cool is that? So no more like Venmoing people over, you know, your iPhone. And it gets even better, friends. Turno offers a simple, affordable pricing for STR hosts of any size. Single property accounts and marketplace users get access to all the platform's tools and features for free. And they make working with your existing teams easy too, with plans as low as just $6 per property per month. There's so much to Turno, so I want you to take just 5 minutes to explore their offering further at turno.com/behindthestays. And the team there is offering Behind the Stays listeners a $150 Amazon gift card after you complete your first turnover before March 31st of 2024. So don't sleep on this, folks. Go to turno.com/behindthestays to learn more. And so what was the business model? Exactly. Like, okay, hey, well, we can design these really cool looking pods, and I'll have, you know, links to all this in the show notes so people can go check out these designs, but they're absolutely like remarkable, right? They're very, very cool, beautiful structures. And I want to hear a little bit about the materials in just a second, but was the basic business model like, hey, we know how to design really cool stays and these really cool structures. We know how to build them now in these factories. Let's go and partner with people that basically want to build like next generation hotels, and let's sell them our designs, and or let's sell them the full unit, or talk to us a little bit about like the actual business here.
So there's two kind of different businesses. So there's the tent business. So we deliver tents to people and we set them up. And this is relevant to people who have Airbnb, and I'll explain a little bit why. One of the things that I'm convinced about in terms of, you know, this space is that basically one of the things that could be really interesting, let's say you go to, you know, you don't have this so much in the US, but in Europe you do, where people have like a fancy castle or like an estate or, you know, a wine estate, something like that, or a very beautiful farm in a very beautiful location. And it's an old building. Those old buildings are very, very expensive to renovate and add an ensuite bathrooms and put in proper plumbing and stuff like that. So one of the things is like, you say, okay, well, we take this old castle, for example. They've got tons of land, but half of it, they've just got sheep running around, and say, okay, well, we'll put on, you know, 8 or 9 additional units, ensuite bathroom, air conditioned, insulated, lockable, you know, and quick to build, and that you can, and then you can put your like restaurant, your reception area, your kind of back of house facilities inside the actual old building without doing too much work on it. And you can recreate really interesting short-term stay solutions for people. And I really think that that was a big business. So originally we thought of it for hotel companies exclusively. And that was kind of, that's why we called it Nomadic Resorts. But now as I move forward, I think there's going to, you know, there's so much change going on in this space anyway. I think there's the smart money will probably go on doing those kind of retrofits where you've got less legislation than traditional hospitality industry, and you can get permissions more easily, basically.
Well, and I mean, I don't know too much, if really anything, about like the castles and the states world, but a buddy of mine is the co-founder of Storied Collection. I don't know if you've run across them at all, but my buddy Michael there. And one of the things he was telling me was about how a lot of the properties that they've partnered with, these castles and luxurious like estates, they're incredibly expensive to maintain. You mentioned like renovating. It's just ridiculously expensive to even maintain these historic structures, right? And all of them have, many of them have incredible plots of land that are just sitting there, and they keep up the grounds, and they're spending all this money. They're losing money. These businesses are losing money. These families are losing money. And yet, like, these are some of the most desirable, coolest, freaking looking places in the world. Like, what American doesn't want to freaking go and stay in a castle, right? Like, that's there's something just like in all of us that wants that experience, right? And so, you know, this is not Storied's business model, but I have been wondering, quite frankly, hey, when are we going to see more companies start finding a way to lease some of this land from these estates, build these really cool structures, and then offer sort of like a castle tour experience, right? Or like enable me to walk up to the front of the castle and take my selfie, right? And that's really kind of all I need. Quite frankly, I don't know that I really want to like sleep in the castle. Like, you know, I want to see it. I want to experience it, but I'd much rather have like a luxurious, like, you know, glass box or cool tent like you guys are building outside of the castle, right? So it's a fascinating model. Do you know the folks at Cabin Company at all? Have you talked to them?
No, someone talked about that today to me, actually.
Okay.
I've seen like Getaway, I've seen Collective Retreats, and Under Canvas, there's some different companies in the US in that kind of space. But I think it's going to be super interesting to see how that space develops and whether, you know, appropriate finance goes in that direction, which I think it will eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think the model is fascinating. So talk to us a little bit about these actual units, because one of the things that I've been talking to folks who come on this show a lot about is like, how do you decide, like, unique stays like are all the rage right now, and people want to stay in something that, quite frankly, will photograph well. And that's also like very comfortable. Sometimes there are things that photograph really well, but like they're not actually like that comfortable to be in inside. And then sometimes there are places that are very comfortable, but again, they don't look good on social media. So I'm not inclined to share the stay with my friends. How have you guys thought about this and wrestled with it? And how did you arrive at like the pod structure that you did?
Yeah, we're not very good at market research. We don't really do anything like that. We just go, okay, our market research is like, hey, I want to stay in a treehouse. Let's do a treehouse. that's the way it goes. But basically, what came out of that kind of task force experience was that people were paying for experiences, right?
Yeah.
Be ready to pay top dollar for experiences, partly so that they can, you know, do, you know, photo on Instagram and post it to their friends and make them jealous, partly, I think, because everybody lives in such a high degree of comfort, most of the people that, you know, we frequent or they're in our kind of network of people.
Yeah.
Everyone lives in a very, very comfortable environment. They've got a big flat screen TV. They've got, you know, air conditioning. They've got a bathroom that functions reasonably well. And all of that stuff. So all of those things that we used to be kind of denominators of luxury, you know, they aren't really anymore.
Yeah.
So what our perception of this was is that basically luxury is space, privacy, fresh air. Quiet is now a luxury, a major luxury, actually. And that, you know, being in a beautiful natural environment is also luxury. So we didn't really do any market research. We just said, okay, let's use those things as our kind of guidelines.
Yeah.
And then we did something that was a bit bizarre because my background was in the luxury hotel sector, which was like $600, $700 and that kind of stuff. We said, well, let's just try and aim at giving the same level of physical comfort, right?
Yeah.
As a luxury hotel room. So you feel safe, you're protected, you've got an ensuite bathroom, you've got air conditioning if you want it. And you can charge your phone, right? So that was the second thing. And then how we actually design stuff is a little bit peculiar. So we basically use a process called biomimicry, which is to take inspiration from natural forms or natural organisms. So the first attempt we did was inspired by a caterpillar's cocoon or a butterfly's cocoon, depending which way you look at it. That has kind of quite important symbolic value, safety, growth, transformation. So it had, there was a certain kind of like elegance in that form itself. And then they look really cool, some of them. A lot of them do actually. Some of them are much weirder than we can do. So that was the first one we did. And then the second one we did was inspired by a sea urchin. The third one was inspired by a seed pod, like a little seed that fell from a tree on the site. And then since then we've done like, we're working on one which is like a clamshell now. Like this is a mega super luxury thing now. So everything has a kind of biomimicry story behind it really. And then, of course, that's for the tent stuff.
Yeah.
And then for the bamboo stuff, we use the same process. But in the bamboo things, we've done a lot of different mobular rays. So we've done a stingray, we've done a manta ray, we've done a whiptail ray. So a lot of kind of ray-like buildings. We've done boulders, we've done rock thing formations. So kind of anything that's like, you know, just kind of fits into place and has a logic to it. There's no real rules, you know, and we don't get fucked up and then go and invent something. Sorry, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to swear anything, but
no, you are that's amazing.
There's nothing eclectic, but, you know, there's not some crazy, you know, wacky Hunter S. Thompson style origin story to the thing. It's more like, you know, we take some inspiration from the stuff we find on site generally.
Which I mean, again, like I think all of that just adds to the story arc, right, of the stay and of the experience. So you're, you know, somebody's prospective guests aren't just being able to experience the natural world around them. They're able to kind of stay in an, you know, homage, if you will, to the natural world, right, while they're experiencing it. Like it's quite poetic, actually. And quite frankly, right now, things that are poetic are luxury, right? Like people like to feel like they are getting something that they can't get anywhere else. This whole idea of like this one of one sort of stay, which my friend Ben Wolf talks a lot about, like is this idea of like one of a kind, unique, right? And to your earlier point, secluded, privacy, like all of that is the new luxury. Like I remember growing up, and we had a, you know, I have a big family. And so like anytime we went on vacation, it was like a big deal. And I distinctly remember always just looking forward to the size of the TV in the hotel that we would stay at, right? To your earlier point, like that's what we as kids were like most excited about, the TV and the pool, right? And like that was like all we cared about. And now it's like, to your point, it's like my TV at home is way better than than any TV in a hotel that I've been to recently. Right. And so like that's no longer attractive or interesting or exciting. Right. What's more attractive is actually going to a place where there is no TV. Right. Like that's cool. 'Cause it's scary. It puts me outside of my comfort zone, right, a little bit. And it's replaced the TV with a freaking, like, glass wall that I can see directly out into, like, you know, the abyss, right? So it's certainly, like, the right time to be building a company like this. Who are your, like, customers? Like, who right now are buying these pods, these units from you guys?
Yeah, that's a real funny question. So it's not necessarily who we expected. Okay, so we do work for the fancy hotel companies, right? So we'll do stuff for like Banyan Tree. We're doing a floating resort for Tamara in India, which is a kind of high luxury thing. But wow. We did another one. We did a big one. We're just finishing it now, where we did, I think it's nearly 40 tents on that project. And that's in the middle of Athens. It's in the middle of a city.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Which I'd never expected. I thought it was always going to be rural. I thought it was always going to be remote. But actually, it wasn't, because it depends on planning permission to some extent. So we got those kind of clients. We've got the hotel-y kind of guys. Then we have people like David Leventhal at Playa Viva, which is actually one of my favorite projects. He's a really cool guy. He's started the regenerative travel movement. He's got like a zero carbon off-grid, you know, permaculture inspired yoga retreat in Mexico. And, you know, those are probably the people we do like to work with most, is the kind of, and he's like, I don't want air conditioning. I don't want a TV. I don't want to even have a conversation about having a TV. And he was like, I want it to be completely open. I want you to be able to feel the wind of the coming off the thing. And those are the ones where you get to do stuff, which is very kind of exciting. And then you can start doing things which where the actual accommodation becomes a destination and people will go there to stay in that treehouse.
Yeah, yeah. Do you guys, because one of the things that I think is interesting about your model is you're not just designing these units, right? You're also manufacturing them. You're also building them. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So, and that, I feel like that is one of the, like a lot of people I've talked to have worked with great, you know, architects or really cool designers. And then the actual build is always where it's like, they got to go find like the right contractor. Right. And finding all of that in one, at least to my extent of the, you know, of my own knowledge is hard to do. Like it's quite rare to find somebody who can design something really, really, really cool and then also build it. So I want to hear a little bit about like moving forward. You mentioned at the top of our conversation a little bit about how you think the short-term rental crowd, the Airbnb, you know, these hospitality entrepreneurs that are quite frankly building these luxury, you know, landscape hotels, these, you know, distributed hotels is something that people are talking a lot about today too. Like this idea of how do you have one brand, but have like multiple units spread across like a specific region, even if they're not all on the actual same site. Like all these conversations and topics of discussion are quite hot right now in like the Airbnb short-term rental ecosystem. So where do you think this all goes? Like, do you guys imagine a world where you partner with an entrepreneur who just bought 50 acres of land in, you know, rural Kansas and wants to build the first landscape hotel in Kansas? Or what sort of buyers do you imagine you will begin to attract over the next few years as you guys continue to grow?
You mentioned one person, Ben Wolf. I think he's doing some pretty interesting stuff. You know, he's certainly doing some very, very interesting projects. I've been kind of following him on LinkedIn a little bit. What I think will happen is I think people will identify little gems, right? They'll say, okay, you know, you could do it through the whole Airbnb network and say, okay, that Airbnb, you know, on the edge of Zion National Park is really successful. The thing's booked out the whole time. People can't get enough of it. It's really quaint. It's got the kind of little, you know, ranch house, little house in the prairie vibes. And what people do is they'll say, okay, so if I take that property and I add another 6 or 7 rooms, okay, and like, and maybe a food truck or something like that, then you have a very different financial model, right? Because you can generate a lot more rooms revenue. You can still keep your costs down. You can outsource a lot of the housekeeping stuff. I think basically what will happen is people will take some of the kind of technical standards from the traditional hospitality industry, and they'll start applying them to these kind of products and creating almost kind of brands within that ecosystem. Because we've got a third company, Nomadic Escapes, which is actually focused on this, which is basically, I think it will become nichified in that people will go to stay in places for specific experiences or for specific activities. So that could be, you know, one of the ones that we're interested in is the adventure sports market, is identifying, you know, prime locations next to, you know, legendary mountain biking tracks or fantastic surf spots. And you go, okay, what we do is we're going to articulate the design around surfing, for example, in that scenario. Yeah. We make it the perfect tent. You got surfing memorabilia, you got surfing deco, you got a perfect place to store your board, you got a place to wax your board, you got, you know, wax in the thing. You figure it all out so that the experience is curated. And then you basically market that to that particular niche. People come there to do that particular activity. And the people who share that activity or that interest, they have a better spirit of community than you would do if you take random people and say, okay, he's a foodie, he's a, you know, whatever, an accountant from Ohio, and, you know, they're kind of random people who, and he's a hedge fund manager and nobody wants to go near him. you get all of those kind of, you know, you get a sense of community that is definitely lacking in the hospitality industry, the traditional hospitality industry. People are lonely. People are lacking real community, and people will go to places to find people who do the same stuff as them. And that could be, you know, last time I was in the US, I saw I met a guy. Well, actually, I met a couple of guys doing this. There's a guy who did a kind of 420 cannabis hotel style thing. I think that kind of thing will take off. And then you'll get other people who will do. We got a request. This is crazy. We got a request from Tulum to do a camp for MMA fighters and CrossFit dudes. For real.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah. And I was like, that's really niche even by my standards. So why do you think it's going to work? And the guy goes, well, we're here in Mexico. There's 12,000 CrossFit clubs or whatever it was in the US.
Wow.
And they're all super communal. They've got a really strong sense of community. They're all socializing with each other. And if the opportunity came and go and push tires around in Mexico, at Tulum, which is probably...
People would take it.
Yeah, this is a while back. It was probably more fun back then. But I think that's certainly a really, really interesting notion, because people can find stuff they're interested in.
Last minute cancellations suck. And that's why we built Ping. Ping makes it easy for guests to be notified when their favorite Airbnbs become available. Ping is a simple widget that lives on your website or your direct booking site and allows your fans and followers to sign up and be notified if their preferred dates become available. Here's how it works. Jimmy sees that you're booked the whole month of October, but he wants to be notified if any 3-night window in the month becomes available. Jen is a returning guest and she wants to be notified if any week in June, July, or August becomes available. In a matter of seconds, Jimmy and Jen fill out the simple form and they will be pinged if the requested dates become available. And as a host, you will immediately get pinged via email with Jimmy and Jen's contact information and requested dates, which enables you to build up your own database of guest email addresses. Ping is what the best Airbnb hosts use to maximize bookings. You can get access to our beta pricing with plans that start at just $39 a year at bnbping.com. Again, that's bnbping.com. What you're talking about, Louis, is so interesting too, because when you think about sort of a traditional hotel, right? You think about the traditional travel destinations, New York, Miami, you know, LA, whatever it is. And, you know, the hotels that are designed in those places, like they bring in, right, some of the community, some of the local environment to a very, very minimal extent. And they can't go deeper because at the end of the day, the unit that they're selling is exactly the same, like more or less, right? Like they're selling the same kind of room, whether you're in Miami to go to the beach, whether you're there for work, whether you care about the local, you know, Cuban food scene or not, right? The actual unit type, they can't specialize too much. But what you're talking about, right, is on the total opposite end of the spectrum, which is that no, you can build stay units for very, very specific segment of travelers. And because the model isn't quite like a hotel or anything like a hotel model of needing to build this massive building and, you know, have $100 million, liability, quite frankly, like on your balance sheet, you can instead start with 6 units that are perfectly curated and designed for your target market in a beautiful space that makes sense for your target market. And then you can grow from there. So the opportunity to sort of test, right, and then iterate from there is just significant. It's leagues easier and more doable than traditional hospitality. And therefore also has the potential to be way, way, way more impactful and way stickier, quite frankly, as an experience.
Definitely agree with that. So, you know, the traditional hospitality model, you could go, and I've done this, believe me. So you can go to a Hilton in Delhi, yeah, and you wouldn't know whether you were in Delhi or you were in Oklahoma. The room vibe is pretty much the same. There might be like some kind of reference of a little bit of a tacky kind of simulated art, you know, bad painting of a Maharaja or something, but that's about it. And that's because it's all standardized the way that they have these very cumbersome technical services. So, you know, everything has to correspond to all of these standards that they've worked on for years and years. So they can never adapt their model. Well, they can, but they just won't do it because those dudes have been paid 15 years to develop all those standards. And if you suddenly say, no, we don't want to do your standards anymore, they'll start crying. And God knows.
Yeah.
So there's a more that what's going to, and you see this in actually the, if you look at the studies for booking.com, Expedia, and you look at the kind of key search words that people are looking for, it's not that, right? The key search words were things like, you know, tree houses, wagons. I saw some cool ones. Even the RV world and the kind of auto camp thing and all that. You know, it's good. I think that stuff can all go to a whole different level, by the way. The whole kind of RV thing, you know, creating very different kind of designs and very different looks and feels to those things. Other ones are quite strange, like onsen spas, right? Which is a very kind of specific Japanese bath where, you know, you feel like you're in Shogun or something on Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, those things are tremendously popular. So the words, you know, the accommodation typologies that people are looking for don't bear much resemblance to the majority of the hotel offering available.
Yeah.
So something's got
to think something. Yeah. On that note, Louis, from your perspective, and this is a question I've had for a while, and I don't know if I have like the answer to it. Do you think that this is just in like the luxury travel space? Do you think it's not in the luxury travel space? Like who, when you think about the kind of traveler, to your point, that is looking for a treehouse on, you know, an OTA like Expedia or Airbnb, like, Is this regardless of you know socioeconomic class, like or is this really something that's more for folks who, hey, I've been to Four Seasons, I've been to the Ritz, and now I'm looking for something a little bit different.
No, I definitely don't. I think that's what's interesting is that it's very broad because it appeals to something that is related to authenticity as opposed to luxury, right?
Yeah.
And also there's a kind of nostalgia people have for certain kinds of things as well. And I think, you know, cabins in the woods and kind of you know, outdoor experiences and these kind of, I think these things aren't related to, you know, your socioeconomic situation. I think they're much deeper than that. And they're about people trying to enjoy experiences that might have been part of their childhood or fond memories or of another time. And that sounds like retrospective and nostalgic. But I think within that, there's something, you know, almost an innate need to stay in places that are not are unconventional. Maybe we're all deep, you know, I know you guys all do paleo in the US. Maybe we're all like a little bit of a caveman urge deep down inside us. We all live in a cave. I don't know. But I think there is definitely this thing which people want to have a different experience and they want to have an authentic experience. They want to taste authentic food. And there'll always be, you know, your business traveler who wants, you know, his 5-point bathroom and his, you know, super comfy high thread count bed and, you know, 40-inch TV, 900 channels. But we don't really deal with those guys too much, thank God.
Yeah.
So I think particularly for the younger generations, I think this is going to be a big thing. I think that they, and they also want to be able to photograph. They want to be able to tell a story. Who, you know, who's going to start a story with, I was staying in the Hilton Doubletree and it was, that was about it. You know, the story ends there.
Whereas,
you know, if somebody has had some incredible experience, you know, of eating, you know, fresh tacos on a Mexican beach and a campfire and staying in the treehouse, they're like, that's worth sharing.
Yeah. Oh, this is so fascinating, Louis. I've got so many questions for you, but we are wrapping up on time here. I have one final question, since we were just sort of talking about hotels, and why people, you know, I don't know anyone that would, if push came to shove, choose a Doubletree over a tree house. But these hotel brands, they're massive, right? They're many of them are household names. They do have loyalty programs, which a lot of the, I mean, Airbnb has never launched a loyalty program, right? Marriott, I think, is doing some really interesting things with through Marriott Bonvoy, where they're, you know, they've got Homes and Villas now as an OTA, as a distribution channel for vacation homes. And you know, if folks are starting to, in the traditional hotel space, starting to think about, like, okay, what is our play in sort of homes and these more unique experiences? Do you think we're going to see sort of like Hilton launch some crazy treehouse like resort in Tulum, and it's going to look and feel like, you know, something, maybe a project you guys are working on right now, but it's going to have the Hilton brand, and you're going to be able to use your, you know, your honors points there? Like, surely hotels have to be looking at all of this and wondering what's our play. Right? Like, are you, like, have you heard any musings or like, what do they think about all of this?
I think the same thing happened with wellness resorts and wellness retreats and wellness destinations, right? They tried to launch their own spa brands. They tried to get into it, but actually, you know, the best spas had some kind of hippie crystal healing dude at the back behind them all sort of casting spells. And I think that, you know, they could never really emulate, you know, these holistic wellness retreats. So what they'll do is they'll go and buy them up. That's what will happen. You know, the big hotel chains will be on the lookout for up and coming, you know, brands, you know, with specific skill sets or with certain unique characteristics. And they'll just go, okay, they'll buy them. And then they'll probably mess the thing up by imposing all of their rules and regulations onto the new project. So that's probably the way it's
going to
go, I guess.
Yeah, I suspect you're right. I do know that there are a lot of folks who've been on this podcast, in fact, that are hoping that happens. That not the messing up part, of course, but that you know, a hotel will come in and buy their project. My final question for you, Louis, is around how do folks work with you? Like, can anyone come and purchase a unit from Nomadic Resorts? Like, is there a certain like caliber or like, you know, a specific type of buyer you guys are exclusively working with at this juncture? Or if I've got, you know, 50 acres of land and just an idea, could I come talk to you? Like, what's the best way for me to approach a conversation with you all? If you know, any of our listeners like myself was very inspired after seeing your renderings.
Yeah, no, we work with all sorts of people. So we're pretty agnostic, right? This is going to sound very unprofessional, but I'm going to say it anyway. We basically do the projects that we like and we find interesting.
I love it. Which is very honest.
Probably not the best business acumen, but you know, for the tents, often it doesn't make that much sense. Much below like 5 tents if you're buying off products. Yes. But we also design bespoke tents for people. We've got things like the seed pod, which are these little hanging tents that you can hang in forests and people sleep in them. And we're going to be bringing some new tent models, which are a little bit cheaper and more affordable. Probably either at the end of this year or beginning of next year. So we're looking at kind of moving more into the traditional glamping space, let's say. As I say, I think that there's going to be a significant intersection between, you know, I think there's these different kind of circles of influence that are happening. There'll be the wellness thing, right? Wellness tourism, that's going to be huge, huge business. I think there'll be the kind of glamping and outdoor lodging sector. And I think the Airbnb kind of sector will all kind of, there'll be intersected spaces between those things. So like, you know, it depends. If somebody has like a very successful Airbnb or they have a big piece of land, they want to build, design a bunch of tree houses on it. Pretty good chance if they seem nice and place looks nice, we'd probably say yes.
I love it. I love it. Well, I would encourage everyone who's listening to this conversation today, if you have a project in mind and you've been looking for the right kind of unique stay structures, go ahead and check out Louis's website. I'll have it linked in the show notes below. And the reason for that is like we're seeing more and more of these kind of like cookie cutter, quote unquote, unique stays kind of like pop up across the states. People have caught on. People are building these tree houses and they're using, you know, the same designs and the same renderings and plans, I should say, from some of the more like well-known brands in the states. But I've been very impressed by the real uniqueness of Louis's stuff. I know this market pretty well, and I haven't seen many, if any, that look quite like what they've done. So if you're building something unique, you've got the land, and you're just trying to figure out what the actual units should look like, be sure to check out Nomadic Resorts. I'll have it linked in the show notes. But Louis, thank you so much for your time, man. It's been a real pleasure. I'm a huge fan of what you guys are doing, and I hope we can stay connected.
Thanks very much, Zach. It was really a pleasure to be on your show. Much appreciated. It's been fun.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Behind the Stays. I'd love to know what you thought of the episode. Feel free to shoot me an email directly at Zach, that's Z-A-C-H, at spontaneous.com, or find me on X, formerly Twitter, at ZBoozy, that's Z-B-O-O-Z-E-E, or on LinkedIn at Zach Boozy Cruz. If this is your first time tuning in, it's a pleasure to have you, and we hope to have you back again soon. If you've been a listener for a while, though, I'd greatly appreciate if you could subscribe and then leave us a rating and review of the show wherever you are currently streaming this podcast. Last but certainly not least, Spontaneous and Behind the Stays are totally bootstrapped, and my ability to bring you these stories is only possible because of our incredible advertising partners. We're very much a startup show, and while our growth rate is amazing, thanks to all you who keep tuning in and sharing our show with your friends and family, we haven't quote-unquote made it yet. So if you could do me a huge favor and go and check out the sponsor for today's episode in the show notes below, I would greatly appreciate it. Even if their offering doesn't make sense for you right now, sending them a quick message on social or an email, just saying that you're listening to the show and you appreciate their support would be incredibly amazing. All right, friends, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will see you on the next episode of Behind the Stays.